Welcome. This is Heart of Mind Radio for the New Millennium. I'm Catherine Davis. Stay tuned. And on today's program, we are going to be looking at some interesting developments with regard to health, and maybe not just health, but well-being. So stay tuned for our program today. Mighty River, and there's a way in which all of us are part of that mighty river of humanity. Those natural to the earth who are called to live in harmony with the earth resources and with the flow, the waxing and waning of time. I sometimes wonder where humanity might be had it not been overtaken by forces of, I will say, control. Because not to judge whether something or someone is good or bad, angelic or evil, who knows? But it does seem like the mass of humanity has had to struggle through the ages in order to find its full sovereign state of being. And from my vantage point, being sovereign is being able to have an impact on the forces that are controlling our lives. So it seems to me that governments, such as they are around the world, have gone amok, and they are creating havoc and disaster and death for citizens, for humans, for inhabitants of the earth. No matter where we might be, there's something going on that is challenging people's capacity to live well and prosper, as Spock would say. And I think the prevailing problem are these systems of control, economic control, the desire for power and wealth at a scale that is psychotic. I think everyone desires to be prosperous and to be able to have a lovely home and a roof over their head and transportation and meaningful work. I don't think it takes a whole lot to satisfy most people, most humans. You have your families and your communities and your endeavors, whatever they might be. In the old days, it might have been a fisher person or a bricklayer or, you know, someone who was contributing to the overall community. But nowadays, we seem to have been overcome by information warfare that works to undermine any semblance of truth-telling or undermine our capacity to be able to discern what motives are and what things are going on in the world and why things happen as they do. A lot of people are inclined to think of conspiracy theories and conspiracy reasons. But over the last several years, even the last decade, most conspiracy theories have turned out to be true. And the term itself, conspiracy theory, was created by one of the agencies, don't remember which one, probably the FBI or the CIA, maybe the NSA, I don't know. But the idea is to be able to poison any semblance of information, any semblance of truth, or even an opposing view. So I think we're living in very strange times, and it becomes difficult for us to chart our path in the world because we're not being offered the truth. And last week, I was covering a hearing in Great Britain over the whole COVID fiasco. I would refer to it now. And we had a caller saying that there was some evidence that COVID-19 deaths among the vaccinated are beginning to prevail the statistics. Well, it makes some sense because it seems to me most people are vaccinated, though not all. A good number, a good majority are across the world. So if something's going to continue escalating, then it would seem that that would be the case. But my reason for sharing this is more to call into question people's tendency to jump on the bandwagon. I think the problem, one of the reasons that the progressive movements have failed is because it has engaged in this habit of jumping on the bandwagon and trying to bury people in the media based on them having an alternate view. So the left, it seems, has become so fractured that it's impossible to see or to think that they could stand for much of anything anymore. At least that's in my opinion. You know, it's just my opinion. But I think very clearly information is coming out now that people were accused of being conspiracy theorists about. And they were just forebearers of the truth. And that was ultimately an inconvenience to the narratives that were being put forth by those control mechanisms in place. So I'm going to play a little something from a report put out by an organization called Trial Site News. And this group has been looking at drug trials for many years. It didn't start with COVID, but they've continued on looking at the studies and not limiting the studies to what might have been approved by American drug companies, but really looking to see what's happening around the world. And this is a report on COVID deaths in America.
Welcome to another episode of Trial Site News. On today's show, we're going to be talking about the trend that has been transpiring around the world, and which has now finally come to the U.S. They're calling it the pandemic of the vaccinated, as CDC data now reveals a majority of COVID-19 deaths are occurring among the vaccinated and boosted Americans. We'll discuss what is happening here. And so, from Trial Site News, I am Adrian, and our episode is starting right now. So, as we've chronicled in previous episodes on this channel, the trend of deaths and hospitalizations of individuals vaccinated and/or boosted has been rising. And now that trend has reached here in the US. The Washington Post, of all places, announced the official declaration that this is no longer a pandemic of the unvaccinated, as the majority of COVID-19-related deaths in America now occur among the fully vaccinated or boosted, this according to data from the CDC. Now, the analysis here was done by Cynthia Fox with the Kaiser Family Foundation, otherwise known as the KFF. She said that 58% of COVID-19 deaths by August 2022 were among the vaccinated, revealing that the COVID-19 vaccine was not conferring the protection that the U.S. government has been promising and constantly promoting. And the trend is not good here. The Kaiser Family Foundation reported that by September 2021, 23% of all COVID-19 deaths were among the vaccinated. This figure jumped up to 42% by January and February of 2022, and now here we are in August, and the percentages hit 58% of all COVID-19 mortalities. As the Washington Post put it, for the first time, a majority of Americans dying from the coronavirus received at least the primary series of the vaccine. And now it seems ever more likely that as the majority of the American population is vaccinated, the total number of COVID-19 deaths will become even more overwhelmingly among the vaccinated populations. So now the question arises, will this change the current administrative narrative? Will they use this to try and strengthen the case to get booster vaccines? Or does it challenge the notion that these are successful products at all? After all, they promised the nation that these vaccination shots would get us back to normal. The whole point of the lockdowns that we all endured, we were told, was to hold on until the vaccine came about. We were going to have a cure. Remember? I sure do. And I'm sure most of you remember as well. According to the article in the Washington Post, Cynthia Cox with the Kaiser Family Foundation said, like many experts, she is not surprised by the ratio shift. And there are a few reasons that they point out. First, at this point in the pandemic, a large majority of Americans have received at least their primary series of coronavirus vaccines, so it makes sense that vaccinated people are making up a greater share of fatalities. Individuals at greater risk of dying from a coronavirus infection, such as the elderly, are also more likely to have received the shots. And vaccines lose potency against the virus over time, and variants arise that are better able to resist the vaccines, so continued boosters are needed to continue to prevent illness and death. Now, worth noting here, and something that we here at TrialSite News reported back on in September of 2021, that Albert Bourla, Pfizer's CEO, said at the time that the COVID-19 vaccines wouldn't be enough, and that antivirals as well represented a critical tool in the fight against COVID-19. Yet, the vaccines were mandated even in many school districts where the risk-benefit calculus was highly questionable. Of course, about 68% of the nation's population is fully vaccinated, meaning that only 32% are unvaccinated, so clearly there are more vaccinated persons, and many of the deaths will continue to be the elderly and at risk. However, the trend is still concerning, and it is something that we here at TrialSite News picked up on early in other heavily vaccinated nations such as Australia, New Zealand, South Korea, Singapore, and elsewhere over this past year. For example, during the first 3.5 months of 2022, Australia had twice as many COVID-19 deaths as all of 2020 and 2021 combined. And the vast majority of the population was fully vaccinated even by then. And this trend was also apparent in the heavily vaccinated nations in Europe, such as Scotland. Now, interestingly enough, the Washington Post piece still emphasizes the need for the booster shot. Here is what they wrote on the matter. They said that it is still true that vaccinated groups are at a lower risk of dying from a COVID-19 infection than the unvaccinated when the data is adjusted for age. An analysis released by the CDC last week underscores the protection that additional booster shots offer against severe illness and death as immunity wanes. Let's take a look at deaths in August. When the highly contagious BA.5 Omicron variant reached its peak, that month, unvaccinated people aged 6 months and older died at about 6 times the rate of those who had received their primary series of shots. People with one booster dose were even better protected. Unvaccinated people over the age of 5 had about 8 times the risk of dying from a coronavirus infection than those who received a booster shot. Among individuals who are eligible to receive additional booster shots, the gap is even more striking. Unvaccinated people 50 and up had 12 times the risk of dying from COVID-19 than adults the same age with 2 or more booster doses.
So, this is a report we're listening to from TrialSite News.
That people are not getting the updated booster shots, with just 35 million Americans participating in this latest wave, which is roughly 10% of the U.S. population. Why? Well, because the protection from the existing version 1.0 COVID-19 vaccine wanes to the point that by half a year or so, there is little protection against severe disease and death at all. Which, of course, is why so many more fully vaccinated people are now dying. Naturally, though, there was a lot of concern among the population at large for this never-ending booster shots of the vaccine. Critics have voiced concerns about long-term effects of stacking booster shots, and based on what we see now with the hesitancy of the American public, the fervent belief that the vaccine will stop the pandemic seems to be fading with the American people. However, the White House has gone ahead and announced a 6-week push ahead of the holidays aimed at increasing booster uptake among seniors and people who are racial minorities. As Ashish, White House coronavirus czar, said on the New Strategy, quote, "I feel very confident that if people continue to get vaccinated at good numbers, if people get boosted, we can absolutely have a very safe and healthy holiday season." Now, it'll be interesting to see if they can move the needle of American vaccine hesitancy going forward. In the meantime, though, we of course will continue to keep an eye on this situation going forward, and naturally we'll update you as this story develops.
TrialSite News. So that was an interesting update because it gives you more of the truth and it gives you the perspective from the different sides of the page why it's still a good idea for some, but maybe not for all, is the way it looks, that report looks. And then another thing that I was looking at is the GOP senators are creating a dynamic in the Senate over ending military COVID-19 vaccine mandates. And I think that this is equally interesting. And you'll recognize some of the senators and maybe not others, but I just find it interesting that they are standing up for what they believe to be the truth. And what I find most interesting about what they're doing is they're forcing votes based on their stance. So in the Senate, the Democrats still have the majority, but apparently they still need some collaboration from the Republican side in order to get their defense spending. And these senators are standing up to that funding in order to protect military soldiers from side effects of the vaccine. And the problem is that it is mandated. And so I'm going to listen to what they have to say.
In the military deserve better. The Biden administration's vaccination mandate has forced our nation's young patriotic men and women to choose between their faith and their career, between their medical autonomy and their career. At a time when the military is struggling to meet their targets for recruitment, the Biden administration is firing soldiers we invested in and trained. Some will argue that the vaccine mandate in the military is not new. That is correct, but there are several factors unique to the COVID vaccine that make it different than other mandates. First, the CDC acknowledges that the COVID vaccine does not stop transmission. So the argument that the mandate will stop incapacitating spread in the close quarters of the military is not applicable. Second, the COVID vaccine has a risk of causing inflammation, particularly in young men, particularly the young men that comprise over 90% of our military recruits. In addition, several scientific studies, including a very large one in Israel and another one by the CDC, have shown that a heightened risk of myocarditis for children and teenagers after taking a second COVID vaccine dose. Israel saw elevated rates of myocarditis after young men were vaccinated, particularly after the second dose. Because of this scientific evidence, European countries began restricting the vaccine for certain age groups. Germany, France, Denmark, Finland, and Sweden all limit their recommendations for vaccines for young people. Norway, South Africa, and UK chose to recommend only one dose because of the risk of myocarditis. Dr. Paul Offit, a former member of the CDC's Advisory Committee on Vaccines, part of the FDA's Advisory Committee on Vaccines, resigned over this policy. He also said that even though he's pro-vaccine, he's been pro-everything vaccine for 40 years, that he wouldn't give the vaccine to his 24-year-old son. Third, the mandate ignores naturally acquired immunity. 80% of our young military recruits have had COVID. By compelling the young people to inject a vaccine into their bodies, they're accepting a risk of myocarditis. In fact, it is inadvisable to take a vaccine if you've recently had COVID. Even the CDC admits this. Our service members have spent their entire lives dedicated to protecting our country and making sacrifices to defend the Constitution. Congress should take action, and we're taking action today by saying we will not vote to get on the NDAA, the Defense Authorization Bill, unless we have a vote on ending this military vaccine mandate.
So, I'm going to skip a little bit.
To recruit people into the military, you know, for military service. My understanding is it costs about $15,000 in recruiting costs to bring someone in. And it costs another $50,000 to $75,000 just to prepare someone to start serving in their first unit. This is before all the other training costs that go into bringing someone up to speed once they're in their first unit and subsequently. There are, as I understand it, about 3,400 military personnel who have been dismissed already because of their failure to receive the COVID-19 vaccination. So if you multiply that cost of what we lose, what we spend recruiting, and just with the very initial phases of training and onboarding, you multiply that by 3,400, that's a significant expense. You have to ask, what do we get from it? What do we gain by that? And is what we gain by that anywhere close to what we lose by it? And that's just in the raw numerical terms. When you look at the intangibles of this, it's much worse. These are people who we're relying on to protect us, to protect us and to defend us. It's a well-known fact that there's a problem with morale in the military, and that is contributing to an already significant recruiting challenge that we face. So you add this to that, and it's a buzzkill of the first order. But there was a Coast Guard rescue swimmer who earned high praise from the Biden administration. In fact, prompted a call from President Biden specifically to the rescue swimmer in the Coast Guard. He thanked him for his heroism, saving people's lives in the wake of Hurricane Ian just recently. That same person, that same rescue swimmer, has been requesting a religious exemption to the COVID-19 vaccination, and it was denied, and he's now facing termination. One of countless examples. You look at the economic costs, the human costs, and the resultant consequence to American national security and to the safety of our people. This isn't worth it, especially in light of the other factors that are taken under consideration. Look, whether you've been vaccinated for COVID-19 or not, I have, and I've also had the virus. Regardless of how you feel about it, keep in mind that there are people who have bona fide religious concerns. I'm not getting it. There are other people who have pre-existing medical conditions based on other things they've reacted to in the past. There are others who have acquired natural immunity. Is this really a hill worth dying on? I think not.
Thank you all for coming. I want to thank Rand for leading this effort. I wish I would have heard his presentation. Let me start. I hope I'm not repeating what he said, but I mean, the bottom line here is the vaccine does not prevent infection, does not prevent transmission. So why would we make anybody take it? It is insane. These are self-inflicted wounds, whether we're talking about the military, within our health systems, you know, any parts of our economy where we force people to take a vaccine that doesn't prevent infection or transmission. Again, it's an insane policy. The numbers I have, about 8,000 members of the military have been dismissed. About 17,000 are awaiting some determination on their religious exemption. So it's a serious business. But I'm here, again, I'm speaking for myself, but I'm going to speak on behalf of those that are reluctant to take it. They're not crazy. Again, we now know that it doesn't prevent transmission at all. It doesn't prevent infection. And the fact of the matter is there are safety signals that anybody who's looking at CDC and NIH and FDA data might have cause for concern about. Now, part of our problem here is that the FDA, the CDC, the NIH have not been honest. They have not been transparent. But here's the most recent updates. These are not my numbers. I've assembled them in a chart, but these are FDA CDC numbers coming from the VAERS, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, and the FDA Adverse Event Reporting System. And it shows, to date, there have been 32,220 deaths reported to VAERS associated with the vaccine. Over 1.4 million adverse events. I sent a letter to the CDC FDA in December of last year because people were going through and analyzing VAERS. They were seeing a dramatic difference in the number of adverse events reported by lot. 80% of the adverse events in the U.S. occurred with 1% of the lots. Worldwide, 80% of the serious adverse events were associated with 5% of the lots. I come from manufacturing. If you have that kind of lot-to-lot variation, that is a process out of control. You know what kind of response I've gotten from FDA and CDC on that letter I sent over about a year ago? Zero response. So again, the people who are reluctant, either for religious reasons or just based on the limited data that we're getting from our healthcare officials, they have a reason to want to defend their own personal freedom, their own personal health autonomy, and decide not to do this. And the Biden administration, our military, should not be forcing this on them. And they certainly shouldn't be violating their own executive order that says that only FDA-approved vaccines can be forced on members of our military. I have to this day not received any confirmation from the FDA that any fully FDA-approved vaccines are being administered to our military. So
that was a few of our adversaries, so-called, Republican senators, speaking on their concern of mandates in the military. And I've seen other reports that show that there's tremendous problems with adverse reactions among the young people in the military, including myocarditis, heart problems, as well as others, including difficulty with women having difficulties with their cycles and birthing process. So there are some issues that really do need to be looked at. And I just am one who believes that people should have as much information as possible in making certain of their decisions. Certainly, we all can make our decisions based on our particular healthcare needs and where we are with regard to help. But we also have to look at the risk of taking certain actions. One of the reasons as well that I'm feeling very strong about sharing information about these questions, and almost everything that I've shared is looking for actual information, results of studies, looking at what's happening in the hospitals now as a result of all these actions that have been taken. And one of the things that was done early on while we were still waiting for the miraculous vaccine to come onto the market, all other forms of treatment were largely discouraged. There were massive campaigns against certain antivirals that might have and were shown to help. And people were just not made a priority. Even I can remember very early on when Cuomo was governor still, and he would get on the TV and talk about, we have to prevent the hospitals from being overwhelmed. So it always struck me as rather curious that the priority was not to overwhelm the hospital rather than to ensure that people could get the treatments that they needed. And I think it was one of the first unfortunate choices made in this whole fiasco. And I believe it to be a fiasco still. So another report came out. I'm not going to play it, but just to let you know that the FDA is being sued by various people for some of the stances they took. And one of them is their campaign against ivermectin, the Pulitzer Prize-winning drug that has been safely used for the last 40 to 50 years. The FDA and its accompanying social media cohorts came out with a claim that ivermectin was a horse drug, discouraging people from taking it, where in truth, it was saving lives all over the world. They used it very much in the global south, in Africa, South America, until the campaign against it was more completely taken into effect. But we have to wonder how many people might have lived have they been allowed to take some of these early research treatments that could have saved people's lives. And yet our agencies are still playing that game of stopping anything that might be natural or inexpensive. For instance, ivermectin is pennies to the dollar compared to some of these other newfangled drugs that have come out on the market. But the bottom line is that things have just gone very wrong. The good news is that slowly the narrative is changing. The narrative changes very slowly. And that starts like, you know, started out with the early terrifying vision of people dying and being housed in trucks outside hospitals, only to realize that the people were dying because of the treatment wasn't appropriate. Nobody knew, no blame, but the intubation machines were the cause of a lot of that. And then we had all of these safer drug therapies that could have saved lives, and they were campaigned against. And because they were trying to save hospitals from being overwhelmed, they sent people home without any treatment at all. And I believe that's one of the reasons we have had such high numbers in poor communities, be they Black, Latino, or Caucasian. It was really a question of poverty more than anything else, I think. They sent people home. They passed the virus on to their family and friends and communities, and it blew up, and a lot of people ended up dying unnecessarily. So my hope is that as a society, as a culture, we will become more aware and not be so willing to accept the prevailing view and not be so willing to condemn our friends, our family, our neighbors because they see something that we didn't see. And so my sense is that the narrative has changed. Even with all these things going on, just traveling here today, I took a picture of the latest announcement in the subways on the pandemic. And it says, it's a yellow and a pretty yellow sign. And it says, one call to get COVID-19 treatment. If you test positive for COVID-19, call 212-COVID-19. We'll connect you to treatment. And then on the right side, it says, treatment helps prevent severe symptoms and hospitalization. Call 212-COVID-19 or look for an NYC COVID-19 mobile testing unit to get treatment right away. No out-of-pocket cost and immigration status doesn't matter. And so the messaging, at least in New York City, has officially changed that treatments are now being made available. And I'm sure that there are a number of treatments that are available to people who have been diagnosed with this virus or any other virus. And for those of you who want to check it out, just jot down that number, 212-COVID-19, and ask for treatment that help prevent severe symptoms and hospitalization. And this is an important step for all of us to move to a new page on this, because there's not likely to be any, there won't be any fighting amongst the ranks of humanity between families and friends over what has amounted to a massive scare campaign and a disinformation campaign. So it isn't the dissenters that were offering disinformation. It was the official narrative overall that was offering a misinformation campaign by virtue of eliminating squashing, undermining, banning any kind of perspective that might have challenged the prevailing view. And for me, the lesson for all of us is that we can't allow this to happen in any case, on any issue, be it a war in Europe, be it this virus or another situation. We cannot allow our handlers, as it were, the social media, the media, and the government agencies to control the flow of information, because we have a right to our access to healthcare and the best healthcare. We have a right to information about situations, what all the conditions are, so that we can make intelligent decisions for ourselves and our family. And I think that this is presenting an opportunity for all of us to demand an end to this kind of mind game that's being played on the human population by those privileged few, the neocons and the like, who just want to manipulate humanity towards their own goals. And we have to put an end to it. And I feel that this changing of the dynamic and this changing of the narratives and the revealing of certain truths means that we can't go back to sleep on it. We really have to be very cognizant of what's being done in our world, and because our future depends on it. I don't have children, as it happens, but I have dozens of nieces and nephews. And we want to create a world that is safe and provides opportunity for those who come after us. The indigenous people speak of 7 generations. And I think that we all have to start thinking 7 generations down the line, and making sure that the decisions that are being made are not ones that are going to compromise the life of our future generations. And that's just me. But let me go to a little music. I'm going to play, well, what did we play? We played a little bit of Frog Dancing by David Anthony Clark. Jewel, Absence of Fear. Because that's the space we all need to be in, I believe. And Come to the River by Diane Reeves, which is our call to spirit, our call to stand together in the water of spirit. And so now I'm going to play a little Douglas Spotted Eagle. And this is called Breathe. To breathe, count to three, breathe, and bring our bodies and our spirit and our mind into balance. Hello, you're on the air.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that, as usual, you're doing a great job. And you mentioned the neocons, and that's a really important observation. But to be honest, it works on both sides now, because it appears that there is a dichotomy. The people who you least suspect, you would never think. There's a lot of masquerading going on. So a lot of people walking around with this hippy-dippy approach, and we just want to do everything for you. And they're the people that we loved in the 60s, but it seems like there's some kind of wolf in sheep's clothing going on, because the neocons, as you said, we can readily identify them. But the least that we would expect are now advocating war, and as we always say, what is it good for? Absolutely nothing. And I wouldn't expect you, hippy-dippy Democrat, to be advocating that. But terrific job, Ms. Davis. I just love, I can't wait to hear you on the air, because it's always just so relaxing.
Thank you.
Check your emails. Check your emails.
I will.
November 25th.
I will.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Mike,
okay. Hello, you're on the air.
Holiday greetings, such as they are, to the beloved community. Good tidings and good cheer, and Saturnalia in there, too. Happy Saturnalia. But listen, I really appreciated your program today. I was the one who had heard the headline on Coast to Coast, and I'm glad you fleshed it out for us. Very important information. Let us also remember that language and words are important. This idea, a vaccine, even the good information, is referring to it as that. It is not a vaccine. Vac comes from cow, where you take a bit of the cowpox. That's not what's done. It's an mRNA messenger. RNA, supposedly working on for years, but new technology. So there's going to be big problems when you don't know what you're putting in your arm. I want to address, and we'll have to extend this conversation, to what you were saying about the left. You made some good analysis, and this is why we're in the throes of fascism and white supremacy, and it's been so easy. I heard a program director of the BAI saying that, oh, yeah, the left eats their young, or something to that effect. And we literally do. We don't like each other. And the same thing happens in the black community. And I like to see these things discussed in a book such as mental health professional Catrice Jackson. Quite a body of work, Weapons of Whiteness, and how black people so readily pick it up. James E. Fox left his clinical psychological psychology practice to spend his rest of his time coming out with Addicted to Whiteness. He's doing a lot of work around it. We need to have some of these authors on the air, and there's a one that explains, another book that explains what happens in corporations. So I'm all on board in what you're doing, your accessibility to getting the phone picked up when you're trying to call without the ringing out problems or the dead air problems. Thank you for that, Catherine.
You're very welcome. Thank you. And I appreciate your response. And it's interesting because this is a program that is motivated primarily as a spiritual program, mind, body, spirit, health, and well-being. And I'm going to get back to some of the things that we can be doing to ensure that we sustain our well-being. But sometimes you have to look at health as being so much broader than just the ecosystem of your body. It's the ecosystem of the world we're living in. How toxic is it? How easy is it to breathe and get clean water? We're very blessed here in this region of the world, but not everyone is. And also the political ecosystem has a lot to do with health, well-being, and access to health. And I just think that by promoting that on all venues, it's really important.
Inside my skin, is this space? It twists and turns, it bleeds and aches. Inside my heart, there's an empty room, it's waiting for lightning, it's waiting for you. Inside.